In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
I'm going to forgo my usual opener and get right into things because there is just too much to talk about in the shadow of Charlie Kirk's murder and the violent attack, not just on him, but by extension, a violent attack on our fundamental right to free speech. I would like to welcome back Kimberly Herman. She is the president of Southeastern Legal Foundation, an organization dedicated to defending your constitutional rights. Kim, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me back on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we really appreciate your time today to discuss this really, truly, incredibly important issue. It's not just one person murdering another. It's not just an attack on free speech. It's so many people on the left side of the political aisle that have said disgusting, reprehensible things. And some of them just celebrating the murder of someone they disagree with politically and ideologically. And I think that's the most disturbing element of all of this, beyond the shock of seeing someone you knew and cared about being murdered. Before we get into the heart of our discussion, I'm shooting from memory here, but it seems like Southeastern Legal had either worked with Turning Point USA or certainly on similar cases around free speech and exercising those on campuses and schools. Did you guys work with Turning Point, and did you know Charlie personally or just from afar?
We did do a lot of work with Turning Point, and we hope to still do a lot of work with Turning Point. I was never fortunate enough to actually meet Charlie in person. We had been at some of the same events, and I've seen him speak, and really just at a loss for words, like so many other Americans right now who, even though we didn't know him personally, you feel like you lost a personal friend last week.
But we
have had the pleasure of working with Turning Point USA, helping over 100 chapters with different legal issues over the years, training thousands of their members on their free speech rights. And, you know, these students are so unbelievable on these campuses. I mean, they have stood up over the years, really when they're being faced with all of this silencing that we're seeing happening now and all of this hate. And they saw Charlie as an inspiration. They wanted to mimic him. They wanted to be just like him. And they wanted to stand up for America. And it's been an honor to work with them over the years. Mm.
Well, what got our attention was a post of yours on Facebook that you were hearing some issues that students are having trying to form new Turning Point chapters at their schools. That we're going to come back to that. There is a really excellent article that I just came across today. It's on the College Fix website, and it was written by a Wisconsin University professor. And I'd really like to get your reaction to this, given that Southeastern Legal is out there defending the right to freedom of speech. And he is, this author is disgusted by how his university and other universities have handled this whole situation, including the professors at them. He said that every university should have immediately condemned the killing of Charlie Kirk for expressing his ideas on a college campus, because universities are the one place in society the sole purpose of which is to express opinions and ideas. And he asked his own students if any of their other professors there at the University of Wisconsin had talked to them about the murder or condemned it, and they said not one professor had spoken to them. But here's the big takeaway, I think. Quote, conservative students and faculty are taking this silence on behalf of administrators as an endorsement of violence against them. Can I get your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, I read that piece too, and I don't know that professor, but it's one of the most powerful things that I've read in the last few days. And he's not wrong. Schools, high schools, K through 12, colleges, law schools, they need to come out condemning what happened.
Yes.
And instead, what we're seeing is celebrations that are going to only incite further violence. It's reprehensible. It needs to stop. And more schools need to stand up and really just be, return our colleges to the marketplace of ideas. And I know it might sound cheesy, but that is what Charlie tried to do every time he stepped onto a college campus. And it's what I hope students now wake up to, knowing that they need to do that because their professors are not going to do it for them.
No. Well, just some of the horrible things that have been said out there. I mean, it's just kind of what you would imagine the left would say at a time like this, including celebrating his death. But I've also seen reports of teachers, employees, and even government officials who have lost their jobs for the things that they've said. And personally, I don't think teachers who celebrate somebody's death should be out there teaching children. But should they lose their jobs? And doesn't that conflict with First Amendment protections?
Yeah, I mean, this is really a hot button topic right now. They absolutely should not be in our schools teaching our kids, right? That's why so many of us have pulled our kids from public schools. And I know it happens at private schools too, but, you know, for the most part, that's what we're talking about at public schools. But, you know, there's a line here. It's a fine line. I recognize that. But saying that you disagree with somebody, even saying that you necessarily want somebody out there to potentially be harmed at some point, some courts might say that, you know, that's protected First Amendment speech. But here we have something very different. We have somebody who was brutally murdered in front of the entire world.
Yes.
Okay. And to celebrate that is to be supporting it. It is to say, be saying we need more of that. And it is inciting violence. And once you cross that line, when you incite violence, when you tell people that they need to be going out there and killing and murdering and attacking others, that is certainly not protected by the First Amendment. So I acknowledge it's a fine line, but these posts, they cross that line.
Well, the one thing that you can trust in politics is not what people say, it's what they do. And I think looking at these universities, kids are not stupid. They see how you handle one situation versus another. They see the difference there. And that UW professor contrasted the utter lack of response about Charlie Kirk's killing versus an event held previously at the UW campus. He said this, when a little 5'4", 96-pound grandma, sister Cindy Smock, came to our campus to talk to kids about Jesus, they had sent out a campus-wide email telling the students that if they need to talk about their traumatic experience, that counselors are available and there's a safe space where they can go to cry and play with toys. They then assembled a task force to determine how to handle people like Sister Cindy and the trauma that she inflicts on students. I mean, good Lord, that kind of disparity, the unequal treatment, isn't that itself a violation of speech? I mean, can anything be done other than call them out? Because I'm getting a little tired of just calling people out and nothing happens.
It absolutely can be done. That is blatant viewpoint discrimination. We actually just won a lawsuit on behalf of Turning Point and Riley Gaines on that very issue at the University of New Mexico.
Well, that's pretty cool. I mean, that's good timing. Let's go ahead and take a break there. Pam Bondi didn't kind of blow it. She absolutely blew it when she said they would be absolutely coming after people for hate speech. Republicans and people on the right were the loudest ones against her. And coming up, we'll talk about that and what can be done about the violence and the hate from those on the left. Stay with us. Southeastern Legal Foundation fights to defend your constitutional rights when the government decides to run right over them. Their website is slfliberty.org, slfliberty.org. And in case you missed that, it'll be on today's show page, ispyradio.com/15-38. And we're talking with Kimberly Herman. She is their president. And so, Kim, I mentioned during the break there about some of these polls, and you had not heard them, so I'm just going to spring them on you. These are truly disturbing. The same day, just hours before Charlie was killed, the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression released a survey of 68,000 students from 257 universities nationwide. One in three respondents said it was acceptable to use violence in response to offensive speech. And then back in April, there was a Rutgers University poll that found that 38% of people said it would be at least somewhat justified to murder Trump, and a majority of those on the left, 56%, so clear majority, said it would be justified. I mean, when you have one in three people saying violence is acceptable and when someone uses their right to free speech, when you have a majority of people on the left saying it would be okay to murder Trump, there is something seriously wrong there.
I mean, yes, as we said before, I mean, we really are at a watershed moment in our country. We have a spiritual crisis. We have a constitutional crisis. And it has percolated its way up because these kids have not been educated properly. They have not been going to church or they have not been learning about the Constitution. They have not been learning basic moral values. COVID had a lot to do with it, but now they're the ones in these colleges who are getting polled. And quite frankly, the numbers speak for themselves. It's terrifying.
Yeah, it is absolutely terrifying. And I'm sure with you, with the young kids, this has to be especially worrying what this current generation is learning or not learning in schools about our basic rights. So getting to Pam Bondi, she had said that it was in an interview. I've only heard a 30-second clip. I haven't heard the whole thing. I know that she has since walked back these statements, but she had said, quote, "We will absolutely target you, go after you if you are targeting anyone with hate speech." And okay, I kind of get the essence of what she's saying. She should have said, I think it should be focused on lies and violence, because that's where so much of the violence comes from, is people are believing lies about somebody else. So what should the federal government be doing, if anything, about this?
Yeah, I mean, I from a federal government perspective, I think we need to really look at, like you said, our schools, our colleges, our local governments, the actual employers of many of these individuals who are out there and calling for more violence. I think you can just look at the student at the university in Texas. I forget which school it was exactly, but a student who's no longer there. We don't know if he got expelled or left on his own. But he was standing there at a memorial mimicking the motion of the assassination of Charlie Kirk. That is not free speech. When this just happened and these people are grieving there, you are up there mimicking and basically celebrating the murder of somebody and showing that it should be done again. That absolutely could be considered to cross that line. And so, again, it's a matter of where that line is. And I mean, there's no doubt these cases are going to end up in court, right? And so the Supreme Court's going to eventually have to grapple with it. But for now, our government should be looking for true threats of violence against individuals.
Mm. Well, as I said, I think one of the focuses that the federal government, in my opinion, ought to be looking at are these lies that are told about people. I mean, you can say what you want about somebody. It's totally your opinion. You can say that you hate them. That's fine. That's you're allowed to believe that. But you can't say, it seems to me, you can't say that they said something or did something that they didn't do or say. And I think the left gets really inspired to these kinds of violence. And this, I mentioned earlier that poll where 1 in 3 thinks that violence is an acceptable response to a speech they don't like. And they get inspired to that because they believe something that somebody else said about them. And it's usually a lie or a twist of what they said. So how do we handle that? I mean, do we need to start beefing up things like libel law and slander and whatnot? How do we handle the lies?
Yeah, I mean, there's always civil remedies for that, right? And so that's really where, and it's challenging, because when you have a public figure and lies are being told about them, the bar is necessarily going to be higher and stuff. And so, I think we need to really be looking at the root of the problem. And the root of the problem isn't the lie, it's why are they making the lie, yeah, right? And it's why are they so uneducated? Why are people putting out this false information? How are they able to do it, right? Social media, all of these, I don't even know what half of these chat rooms that have been mentioned in the news these past few days, I've never even heard of them. But I know gaming, et cetera, things mm-hmm. like that. We need to look at where the root of this problem is and really fix that as a nation. Because, if somebody's defaming somebody, they can file a lawsuit against them. I don't necessarily think that that's the government's place to be prosecuting that. But as a people, we need to fix this problem. We need to fix the rot that's in our country.
Sure. Yeah. Well, rot is exactly right. I mean, this is very much a spiritual battle. As you said, there is something absolutely wrong with people if you think that violence is the proper response to something that somebody said, or that you think somehow murdering Trump or Charlie Kirk in this case is justified. We'll move on from that. But do we need to make things easier for people to sue people that lie about them? Because right now, I think a lot of people avoid that because they know it's going to take years and it's going to take a lot of money. So do we need to make that easier for somebody to say, hey, you lied about what I said? I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that really brings us to kind of like access to the courtroom issues, right? And things like that. It costs a lot of money to bring lawsuits. We see this in our work representing parents. You know, you could be a Moms for Liberty member just going up and fighting for your kids at a school board meeting. And then all of a sudden, all of these people have put out these lies and horrible statements about you on social media, and they surely don't have the money to go file those lawsuits. And so, you know, I do have confidence in the laws that we have out there on the books. And, you know, today's Constitution Day. We are a nation that is, you know, where we focus on rule of law. We focus on our Constitution. We have free speech rights and stuff. And so, you know, I just think it's important that we use those laws and educate people on the fact that they exist.
Yes. Yeah.
What are they? How do we exercise our First Amendment rights? If we are defamed, how do we bring a lawsuit? People don't even know about these things.
I don't suppose you have a handy tool for that sort of thing there on slfliberty.org, do you?
We have one for parents and we have one for college students.
Well,
we have guidebooks that we put out, and we do lots and lots of webinars on this issue.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, it is time for a break. Don't be intimidated if your kids are being told they cannot open a Turning Point USA chapter at their school. Well, there is a remedy for that. We'll talk about that next with Kim Herman. Southeastern Legal Foundation, a nonprofit organization, is dedicated to defending liberty and sues governments when they overreach and when they violate your constitutional rights. They also represent clients free of charge in cases where their involvement will make a lasting difference for all Americans. And we are talking to the president of Southeastern Legal, Kimberly Herman. And speaking of representing clients free of charge, I had mentioned going out of that break there that if parents are being told that their kids cannot open a Turning Point USA chapter, well, you guys have a remedy for that. So I had seen on Facebook that you're hearing from some parents that they're being told not to. So what are you hearing from parents about what schools are telling them?
Yeah, I mean, we've had quite a few parents reach out to us, one, to just make sure that they're empowered with the right information as their kids try to start these chapters. You know, I mean, everyone at Turning Point USA is grieving, and they have so many requests to start so many amazing chapters. And so we're just here as another resource to support them. We've definitely heard of some schools that were, you know, they were initially getting pushback. And most of those have backed down, but this is a recurring problem. You know, just recently we worked with some students at Westfield State University because their student government told them that the Turning Point chapter was going to cause stress among all of the other students, and that they, because they disagreed with their politics, they were not going to give them a charter. We obviously got them their charter. But, you know, unfortunately, that's nothing new. And I think we're going to see more and more of it, unfortunately, but it's wrong and it's unconstitutional, and parents and students need to know that they can fight back against it.
Well, we mentioned earlier about that disparity between how the University of Wisconsin had handled the Charlie Kirk murder versus what somebody had shown up there to witness to students. And as far as organizations on the left, do you ever see them getting denied chapters at various universities?
We absolutely do not see them getting denied their charters and stuff. I mean, this is blatant viewpoint discrimination, and the left is kind of sneaky about it, right? It might be that you have to have a faculty advisor. It's pretty normal that you have to have a faculty advisor to start an organization at high school or in college. And they scare all of these professors and say, you know, you cannot be a faculty advisor for a conservative organization if you want to get your tenure.
Wow.
And so it becomes this.
Have you ever sued over
restraint.
That? I mean, I hate to interrupt, but that's fascinating. Yeah. Have you ever sued universities for that kind of threat?
We have not. We've been able to help secure them, the students, faculty members, or send demand letters. And so I can tell you, you know, I mentioned that we've helped over 100 Turning Point chapters with legal issues over the last, you know, decade, pretty much. And we've only had to bring one federal lawsuit, and we won it recently. Most of these issues can be resolved as long as you have the right information through a letter, through helping the students advocate for themselves, because the colleges, at the end of the day, they know they're on the wrong side of the Constitution. Hmm. They know what they're doing is unconstitutional. They're just going to do it anyway until somebody calls them out on it.
Wow. Well, that's incredible that they're threatening professors with no tenure. And I just think that you hear about some of those, but I can't help but wonder if there's hundreds and even thousands of cases that they're just too afraid to even mention that to you guys. The last I had seen that there are about 49,000 new requests for chapters at high schools and universities across the U.S. I mean, so I imagine you're going to start getting a whole lot more people coming your way. So if they want to form a Turning Point USA chapter at a school, as far as their rights, there aren't any restrictions, like as far as you know, on state levels, like for example, like where one state would handle things differently, like maybe Oregon, than a state like Texas. They all have a fundamental right to form these chapters.
They absolutely all have a constitutional First Amendment right to form those chapters. The hoops they have to jump through are going to be different. And in our blue states, you're going to tend to see a lot more hoops that they make them jump through. But at the end of the day, even in our most conservative states in this country, as we mentioned at the very beginning, academia is still very left-leaning. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to run into those issues at every single, university and college throughout this country, probably.
So if that happens, if they're denied having a chapter, what should the kids and parents do at that point?
Yeah, they need to make sure they document everything. That's always my very first piece of advice. And if they're working with a Turning Point field rep, obviously continue to work with them and they will give you the right guidance. If you aren't, and if you just need extra assistance or want to ask questions, they're always welcome to reach out to us too. They can find us on Twitter, SLF_Liberty. Reach out to us through our website, slfliberty.org. We partner with Turning Point. We are here to support them as they have all of these requests and they try to figure out how to handle all of it. The best way to honor Charlie and to honor our Constitution is to keep fighting for our First Amendment rights, and we're here to help any way we can.
So to be clear for people, even though you guys have the name Southeastern Legal Foundation, you guys do operate here in the Pacific Northwest. You would take a case if somebody brought you one from Oregon.
We operate all over the country. We are heading into our 50th year next year.
Wow.
And when EDME started our freedom-based law movement, all our organizations were started on a regional basis. But we are absolutely a national organization. We have attorneys all over the country. We actually have an attorney up in Washington State now. Yes, we are here to rebuild the American Republic, and that means the entire American Republic.
Yeah, that's awesome. So real quick, have you heard of any cases from Oregon where people had tried to start a chapter and were denied?
I have not yet, no.
Well.
But I'm sure it's coming.
I was going to say the exact same thing. In fact, I happen to have an example myself. As last week, I had heard Riley Ashley, who's from Turning Point USA. She's the Oregon chapter lead here, and she's been kicked off campuses. She goes there to try to form groups. They have the various booths and stuff. And she's had faculty come after her. In fact, she's got, they recognize her now, not just because of her sign, but they know her personally now. And they chased her off using security one time. And so these kinds of things happen here in Oregon. But anyway, we're going to be talking to her next week. So we look forward to that. But in the meantime, Kim, I want to thank you so much for your time today. This has been really great.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Welcome back. We just got off the phone with Kim Herman. She's the president of Southeastern Legal Foundation. And just a reminder that if you or someone you know is being told they cannot open a Turning Point USA chapter at their school, she is the one to contact. You can do so by heading to slfliberty.org, slfliberty.org, and that will be up on today's show page. You can find that at ispyradio.com/15-38. After the horrific shooting of Charlie Kirk and the assault on freedom of speech, thanks in large part to people telling lies about Charlie Kirk, and when people believe those lies, it can lead to violence. Lies and attempts to damage someone lead to all kinds of problems, and we're going to narrow our focus now to something that happened here in Oregon, a state that is desperate for a Republican win to take control away from Democrats who are doing their best to destroy this beautiful state. And to talk about that, I'd like to welcome a small businessman and also the chair of Oregon's Congressional District 6, Don Powers. Don, it's great to talk to you today.
Oh, it is great to be here with you guys again. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity, given everything that's happening right now and how, with Charlie Kirk and how pressing it is on the nation's heart right now. It's real It's a real honor to be here with you guys, so thank you.
It is. And, you know, we enjoy freedom of speech here in the U.S., but there are consequences. You need to make sure that you're not out there telling lies about people, as I said there with Charlie Kirk, and it can do all kinds of damage. And so we want to tell your story about what happened here, because I think, and the reason we're doing this is because I am afraid that what happened is going to damage Republicans' chances going forward. And as an organization, I think what happened to you is emblematic of what not to do as an organization. And so I'm hoping that there's going to be some fixes, and we'll come around to that in our last segment here with you. But why don't you tell us what exactly happened? Because I know that you were elected CD6 chair. You guys, after Trump won in 2024, you decided to hold an inaugural ball. But then what happened thereafter?
Yeah, that's just, that whole thing is so incredibly disappointing. So a friend of mine, she decided that she wanted to, you know, she had the idea of doing some kind of, you know, an inaugural ball. And she'd gone to the ORP and asked them if they had any plans. They said no. Went to the National Committee Man, National Committee Woman. They didn't really have any plans to do anything to celebrate, you know, the election of President Trump. So she mentioned to me, hey, you know, they're not doing anything. Maybe we should do something. And I said, you know, absolutely, let's do something. Let's do an inaugural ball of some sort, right? So we began putting that together. And the whole point of putting it together really ended up being something that for 99% of it was I did, right? I put it on. We had a sponsor, a local sponsor, who was very gracious enough to put up $20,000. She and her husband were going to go to D.C. anyway. And they found out that we're going to be doing this. And they said, we'd much rather help Oregon throw a great party. So they sponsored $20,000. So initially, there was no intention of making any money, right? Let's just throw a party. Let's just have a great party. And I began looking at venues and costs and all kinds of things, and finally came up with this amazing venue about a block and a half from the White House, which was incredible. Just a great venue, and put a deposit down on that. Of course, you know, at that point, starting to realize that, you know, this is going to get pretty expensive. So we got to be careful that we can sell tickets and make enough. So if we could just get, you know, say 200, 250 people, we could break even. And that's all that we were really intending to do. And so I had a phone call with the executive team for the Oregon Republican Party and said, hey, dude, we're going to do this party. I'm doing this party. And I'm not asking for permission necessarily. I'm just saying I'm going to throw the party. But want to know if you'd like us to use Oregon Republican Party, like, and, you know, CD6 in the name of it, because, you know, just in the name, kind of like sponsorship, right? I said, no money from your side, no commitment, no liability, none of that. You're not responsible for any bills that don't get paid or anything like that. I'm taking all that risk. Just want to know if you want to use the name. And so I try to tell people that it's kind of like, you know, KPMG sponsors the LPGA tour, right? They don't sponsor, it's not their tournament. They don't own the LPGA. They certainly don't own any of the tournaments associated with the
naming
LPGA,
rights.
But
yeah,
they put their name on it, right? Yeah. Right? So they pay a lot of money to put their name on it. In this particular case, the Oregon Republican Party and CD6 weren't having to pay anything to have their name on, you know, on this ball, just a way to promote our state, right? We wanted the country to know that Oregon's here and we celebrate, you know, as much as we're this flyover drive-through kind of state. But, you know, we're here and we got a lot of Republicans here and a lot of conservatives here who are really happy that President Trump got elected again. And we wanted to let them know that, you know, that Oregon is here and to quit, you know, and to quit ignoring us, basically, right? So I throw the party. It was, and as I'm getting ready to kind of get everything rolling, I'm talking to my friends at the Gateway Pundit, Joe and Jim Hoff. And they said, oh, wow, how can, you know, Gateway Pundit get involved in this? And so now I'm thinking, oh, boy, this could really, you know, go big. So I'm like, well, just say so. You know, I mean, I couldn't charge them. Like, and my thought was I couldn't charge them for their name on it, like sponsorship, because that's going to really, like, really blow this thing up. So I said, just say you want in. They said, did. So then it kind of became the Gateway Pundit, Oregon Republican Party, CD6, you know, inaugural ball. And so every part of that was, you know, organized by me. I paid for everything out of, you know, on my credit card, plus the $20,000, which of course helped, you know, quite a bit, especially in the very early stages. But as we began getting tickets sold, I was able to reimburse my credit card. You know, of course, that dance back and forth and back and forth with, you know, some tickets are sold, I can take some money, pay off my credit card, you know, back and forth. So anyway, it was a complicated dance to make it all happen. When the night finally came, we had a, you know, as it was growing, it was awesome because we ended up going from just, you know, a very simple, a relatively simple party to now it's become big. We were able to, instead of just like having drinks open for the first hour, we were actually able to have drinks open for the whole night. We expanded the menu for food. We ended up with like 570 people by the time it was all said and done. Those last few weeks were just kind of chaotic because Gateway Pundit got involved. So it just got really, really busy. A lot of details and a lot of expenses on my credit card, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I bet. I know where this then all led, and this is going to take a bit, so let's take a break a little bit early. Doing something nice often leads to some incredible personal attacks when some people have their own agendas. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking right now to Don Powers. This week's show is focused on free speech. And with Don, we're talking about what happens when some people misuse their freedom of speech because they have an agenda, in this case, a political one. And this is important because Republicans have a chance to win here in Oregon, but not if we're constantly fighting one another. He is a small business owner and also the chair of Oregon's CD6. And so, Don, you were talking about how you had set up an inaugural ball for President Trump. And I'd like to kind of skip ahead a little bit because in the process of you doing this, it led to all sorts of problems. It sounded like the majority of it was some confusion as to whether or not it was a fundraiser. And so why don't you start there? Was this ever discussed with ORP or CD6 that it would be a fundraiser for CD6?
No, at no point. In fact, the discussions, there were no minutes in the CD6. We never had that discussion. The executive team didn't really have that discussion. We didn't have any minutes on it. There was no vote or anything like that. It was just simply putting the name on there so they can get publicity. And, you know, the shame of it is, and like you said, we'll get to some of the detail about it, but is that you're talking about this thing going on Gateway Pundit, and, you know, they've got over 2 million viewers, you know, unique viewers a day. So now, all of a sudden, this inaugural ball with Oregon Republican Party's name in it, with CD6 name in it, it gets this all over the country. It's getting all this visibility, and people are talking about Oregon, and people are talking about the Oregon ball and the Gateway Pundit ball, and so on, right? So it's great advertising, right? If you think, what's the value on that? It's incredible. It's fantastic, right? And so very exciting. But unfortunately, what ensued was very difficult because there were some people that were under the, well, in the, like, first of all, in the beginning, there was, again, no intention of really making any money. It was just throw a party. But as it was growing, it was clear that, you know, it looked like we were going to have some profit. At one point, it looked like it was going to be about $30,000 from it. And so I just kind of said, well, I wasn't doing this to make any money, certainly not, you know, not a penny for me. But since there's going to be some money, let's do something with it, right? So we gave $5,000 to the Oregon Freedom Coalition, which, as you know, is a thing, and they do a great job as far as good strategic short-term, long-term, you know, strategy work from the political standpoint. So I really appreciate what they do. So there's $5,000 there. Gave $5,000 to the ORP, and then it looked like there was still going to be, you know, around $20,000 left. And my bookkeeper said, "Hey, don't forget you have to pay taxes on all this because all this came, you know, into your account. Your company, you know, rented the facility. Your company put up the insurance, liability insurance, and all that kind of stuff. So you're going to have to pay taxes on this money like it's income." And I'm like, okay. So I pulled that off. And then there was a couple other little things that as the dust was settling, that number kind of dwindled a little bit. And what I mean by that is just simply like, anyway, the bottom line is it took a little while for the money to settle out of it because it uses a Stripe as the back end. And when the ticketing is done, it takes a while, right? Sometimes 45 days or more to get all of the money out of it, out of the ticketing system. So it was painful, which not something that I was prepared for. So I had to carry a lot on my credit card.
Well, I was going to say, so after the dust settled, how did everybody seem, well, the people that were complaining about this, how did they get the impression that this was supposed to be a fundraiser for CD6?
Well, that's the complicated part. I mean, the lady, the couple that gave the original $20,000 sponsorship, they had mentioned that they thought it was a CD6, you know, or that the money was going to benefit CD6. But yet they wrote the check to my company, right? To my little, and in fact, the company that I started was literally the only purpose of that was just a simple little LLC to handle all the events and the money and stuff for the inauguration, because I certainly didn't want and couldn't really mix it in with my corporate, you know, my company, because that would be, that'd be way too hard to decipher and complicated. So, you know, its only purpose was that, was to simply run the money for the ticketing system and so forth, sponsorship money, whatever that came in through there, and pay all the bills through that. So it was real clean and real simple. And I didn't get confused with anything personal or anything, you know, with my company. So,
well, unfortunately, there was a lot of confusion that resulted from that. So I think the next step was, with all of the arguing, the ORP got involved, and the attorney, I don't know if he's the official attorney or not, but anyway, he weighed in on things and said that, well, you essentially weren't doing anything wrong. Is that the essence of it?
Yeah. So what happened at some point, somebody, you know, really started, and I'm not exactly sure whom all, but started really talking about, oh, this was a, you know, a campaign finance violation, and it's a Class B felony. And I said, whoa, wait a minute. This was never an official, like, CDC sanctioned event or an ORP sanctioned event. And that's when the ORP attorney got involved. He wrote a letter saying, hey, there's no there. The minutes in the ORP are really clear. Don said he was throwing this party, and it was just, you know, like, in name only. And there's no minutes at all within CD6 about, there's no, it's like, it's not a sanctioned event in any capacity. And so one thing that also was frustrating about this, because I started trying to say, look, this was a private event that I put on. People saying, well, I would never have been involved. It was, you know, it was Don Powers' private event. I'm like, no, I don't mean it was like for me or to benefit me. I just mean it was run. Of course, it was meant to benefit our state. And fortunately, when the dust settled, not only did we get all that name recognition through Gateway Pundit and through the hundreds of people that came to it and talked about it, but also, you know, some money came out of it at the end too. And I gave every penny of it away. I mean, $5,000 to, you know, Oregon Freedom Coalition, $5,000 ORP, and $5,000 to the Congressional District 6. I mean, and if you wanted to get really technical, I didn't really have to give any money to anybody. I mean, I'm the one that put the thing on, right, and paid for everything and took all the risk and hired the, you know, the facility and hired the bands and the food and, you know, the everything, right, and took all that risk. But the whole point was to, you know, not prop up me, but prop up our state. And so that's what, you know, that's what I did. But there were some people that were under the impression that, you know, this money, they had, you know, some kind of right to this money, right? Some kind of, you know, and was really disgusting. Like, look, I'm going to give the rest of the money to CD6, like I said that I would, but with all this stuff going on, all this, I need to wait till the dust settles here, because this is getting pretty messy, right? I mean, like, this is getting really messy. And and so that's what really started. And then it just got worse. Yeah. It just got worse. People got worked into a frenzy. It was unbelievable.
They did. And I'm aware of some of that. What bothered me is that, as I recall from the letter from the ORP attorney, he said essentially keeping this going could open the ORP up to liability, and so that you could sue them. And yet it did keep going. And so we're going to go ahead and take a break, and we'll finish that story up with Don. Stay with us. And we're back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. In our final segment now, we're talking with Don Powers. We've been talking all show about freedom of speech. And unfortunately, sometimes that can lead into some real issues. And so, Don, going out of that break there, I had mentioned how people were really starting to slander you. And the letter from the ORP attorney had said, look, you guys need to knock this off. Otherwise, it could lead to liability for the ORP. And so what happened next was there was this movement after they were trying to calm things down. Instead, you had members within CD6 that were trying to call for your head and try to remove you as the chair of CD6. So let's get into that.
Yeah. Well, the most heartbreaking part of that is these are people that literally, you know, I considered friends, right? I've been to dinner with them, or they've been over my property with, you know, and barbecued and had, a, you know, had beverages together and let their kids drive around and are side by side on the property and, you know, run around and, you know, traveled with and whatnot. So just really disheartening to see this happen. And at no point was I given the opportunity to say, hey, let's just go sit down. I mean, early on when the dust was still like going, you know, I didn't really take the lead and say, okay, let's, you know, let's all sit down, let's come together, let's all talk about this. I had a lot going on, and that's, you know, probably my biggest mistake in the whole thing was just not taking the bull by the horns earlier and then letting this fester a little bit. I probably could have headed off, you know, some of it a little sooner. But when it started to get really bad, I said, look, here's, I gave them all of the information. Like, I gave them a spreadsheet, I gave them a folder that had examples of the stuff coming out of Stripe where, you know, somebody had challenged their credit card, charges, and just all the explanation, all the financials were there, the receipts from everything. And all along, the person that was kind of helping me coordinate it, which also happens to be the vice chair of Congressional District 6, she had access to the ticketing system. I had given her, anytime you want, just go in there and you can see it. Just, you can see exactly how much, you know, we've been selling and what the net is. And anytime you have any questions, just like let me know. And then every now and again, I'd give an update about, you know, how many more sales we have and so on. Well, so I was trying to be just, you know, as open as I could about it, but it didn't matter. You know, they got this idea that I was enriching myself. In fact, some people even put it on social media, you know, that I was enriching myself from, you know, this event that I had, you know, basically pilfered money off of a CD6 event when it was never an official CD6 event.
And you know, and so much for calming things down. You know, when it comes to organizations, the number one goal when there's a problem is to fix things, to make things better. But a second goal that is so close, it's practically a conjoined twin on that, is to not make the problems worse. And unfortunately, what I saw from your detractors in CD6, who seemed determined to go after you no matter what, when they're trying to remove you, they were not making the situation better. As you said, there are other ways they could have handled this, where they come to you privately and say, okay, let's talk this out, let's figure out what happened. To kind of jump ahead, they did hold a recall vote. You survived that. But what you went through, I see, as kind of emblematic of what's happening right now in America, the battle of left and right. In this case, it's Republican versus Republican. You know, after Charlie Kirk, a lot of people on the right are asking themselves, how are we supposed to get along with people who hate us so much, who celebrate people killing others because they disagree with what you say? Well, you kind of had the same thing happen, where you had people who wanted to take your chair and wanted to destroy you. I mean, some of the things that they sent out was just reprehensible. They sent out a letter to PCPs along with a huge background check on you. I mean, that's libel as far as I'm concerned. I mean, how now going forward are you going to get along with the people who wanted so badly to destroy you?
Well, there's the question, right? I mean, talking about my alternate chair and my vice chair and our treasurer and these people that, you know, that are aligned against me and were the things that were said and done were so nasty and full of so many lies and, you know, untruths that it was disgusting. I mean, there were like some part of that dossier said something about me having, I don't know what it was, 11 or something, you know, aliases. It's like, no, they're all variations of my name. Run a report on anybody. You get Don Powers, Don J. Powers, Donald, you know, if I had an apartment, if I did Don Powers instead of Donald, or, you know, my middle initial or my full middle initial, that's all, you know, like, that's just normal, like different ways I've signed my name somewhere. It's not like there's true, like some nefarious character out there, but none of them seem to understand it or want to understand that or ask about it. They just work themselves into friends.
And that's one of the horrible things. Yeah. And that's one of the things I really disliked about all of that. There was so much of the emails that I saw, so much of it was innuendo that hinted that there's all this shadowy, evil things that you were doing. For example, they mentioned the bylaws. They cited those multiple times. But when you actually read the bylaws, their accusations weren't actually supported by the bylaws. But because they rely on the fact that people don't actually go and read those things, it was easier to start misleading people. So as far as moving forward, what needs to change organizationally, you think, for the Republican Party to become an effective fighting force to actually win in 2026? I mean, how do we get all of the oars in the water and all pulling in the same direction?
Boy, I really wish that I knew the answer to that. And we've been talking about it for years, right? And, you know, the word that keeps coming to my mind is grace. Like, none of us are perfect. And we need to start, there's nothing wrong with being held accountable, right? Like if they come to me and want to hold me accountable, I mean, some of the things that they mentioned, you know, they got some validity. I should have probably had a few central committee meetings, right? And I can explain why I didn't, but it doesn't matter. That's probably something that I, you know, needed to do so I can learn from that and whatnot. But instead of coming after somebody and attack them, we need to support them. We need to come to them. We need to lift them up when they're, you know, when they're, you know, let's say I needed to do some of those meetings. So come to me and say, hey, look, we're part of your team here. So we know you're really busy. So we're going to help you. We're going to coordinate the central committee meeting, or we're going to help you with this information, or we know you as a friend. So let's sit down and work through this and let's talk about it. Or how can we help? You never get those types of, you know, of things going on. And we need to start doing that to one another. Yes. We need to lift one another up and have a little grace towards one another. You know, we're going to misstep. We're going to misspeak. We're incredibly fallible. I certainly know I am and have been, but you know, we know one another's hearts, and we have to work on having the same goals, the same value system, and maybe the way that we get there is a little bit different, but it doesn't make that person terrible that we have to attack them and go after them and tear them down.
We only have about 45 seconds here with you. Real quick, how do you work with those people that were coming after you? Have you thought about that at all?
I have thought about that quite a bit, and I don't know that that's something that's really, you know, possible. I mean, given what they've said, it shows what they think of me, and they're incapable of seeing it any other way. Mm. Just to give you a quick example, one of the things that was being said was that at one point they wanted to have a meeting about this, and I said that I couldn't because I was in California because my mother was had a heart attack, and we didn't know, you know, what the status was going to be. So I was gone for a few weeks dealing with that. And then somehow this dossier or something else said something about me not having a mother. Well, obviously that's silly, but I mean, not having a mom. And so there was discussion about what a horrible person, what kind of a person uses a dying mom as an excuse to not have a meeting for accountability. It's actually true. And if they had come to my birthday party, which they were invited to in June, they would have met my mom and my brothers who all came in for my birthday.
That's just absolutely, you know, absolutely reprehensible. Don, unfortunately, we're up against the clock. I want to thank you so much for your time and look forward to some kind of resolution for this going forward.
So do I. And I appreciate you getting on here and helping bring this to light a little bit. Hopefully the body will pull together and really help us get a good, strong candidate in place for CD6.
I hope so. I think there are real opportunities for conservatives to win in 2026, but things do need to change and Republicans need to start fighting Democrats and the far left more than they fight each other. This has been an ongoing problem ever since I got involved in party politics way back in 2009. But with everything happening, with the Democrats making all of these mistakes around taxes here in Oregon, and not just the ODOT massive tax and spending bill that they are still trying to shove through, but also the decoupling from Trump's tax cuts for working people, Democrats are going to have a really hard time saying just how much they care about people. Add to that the far left and their attacks on free speech and the absolutely reprehensible things they said after the murder of Charlie Kirk. The Democrats are the ones doing the damage to themselves. We need to let them do that, and if we can just get out of our own way and give voters a reason to vote Republican, maybe we can turn Oregon around. But remember, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.